Welcome to the Sorry I Offended You podcast. This is your host, Brandon Marshall Havener. This episode is called Put the Gun Down. It doesn't necessarily have anything to do with gun control, although I do want to talk about that. But the Put the Gun Down title is more about some mushroom journey, mushroom musings, because I've been on mushrooms, not all the time, but you know, I wanted to share my experience with mushrooms. I wanted to talk a little bit about this weekend with the Airbnb super host fuckery, white rage and white fragility. Obviously, we need to talk about that. And being reactionary on the internet, stop pacifying little bitches, business boundaries, things of that nature. We're talking about lessons through mushrooms, which I said, from my journey throughout this this past year or so. And the school shooting in Texas, I wanted to bring that in as well. Just a little bit of my thoughts, not trying to get too political here, not trying to rehash the same fucking talking points over and over again. So I hope I can bless you with that on this episode. And also bathing in her milk. And that's a surprise. And we will talk about that. If you follow me on Instagram, you already know what that is about. So anyway, as you can see, for one thing, if you're watching the video, you might say that I have new glasses. And the truth is, these aren't my new glasses. These are my reject glasses. These are my secondary glasses. They're not the, so if you think I look better with them, then too bad, because I'm not going to be wearing them. But if you think I look worse with them, then don't worry about it. You don't have to lose sleep over it, because these are my secondary glasses. I recently saw the eye doctor the other day. There's nothing wrong with my eyes. My eyes are great, except my vision got worse. Slightly worse, I guess. I would like to say slightly, but there's no extreme damage to my eyes that should be concerning. I do not have any eye diseases. So that's a good sign. That's a good way to look at, you know, way to look at things. But what I did was I liked my frames. So I gave them my frames to replace my lenses with new lenses. And, so here we are with my reject glasses I got last time. These were my secondary glasses. And the doctor last time said that the thick frames don't look good on the shape of my face, but I decided to get these anyway, just to switch it up. But I am told that the thin wire frames look better on my face, and this looks not as good on my face. So I apologize for anyone who I have harmed through my glasses on this podcast. Sorry for all of those I offended. So anyway, I'm changing up the format a little bit on this podcast, if you may have noticed from the beginning. I decided to, over the week, just think of different topics I want to talk about, or different topics that come up, and recap them. And it's sort of like a video audio newsletter of some sorts, where I combine all of my ideas. And I feel like I've been trying to be so fucking linear with my podcast. If you could tell, I don't know. I don't think I ever come off as linear, but in my mind, I thought I was trying to be linear. And so basically, if you think I've been all over the place before, I'll probably be more all over the place. And if you think I've been too linear, then I won't be as linear. So what I decided was to make 15-hour long podcast instead of those dinky 30-minute, 45-minute, hour-long podcasts. I'm going to outdo Joe Rogan here. I'm going to talk for an entire day, for an entire half a day on this podcast, and you will be committed to listening to the entire thing because you love me so much. And basically, the Sorry I Offended You podcast is a religion now. It's a cult. I mean, why deny it? This is a cult. We're going to have our own language. We're going to have our own Kool-Aid. We're going to have our own rituals and things of that nature. It's a cult podcast. This is for, you know, someone could clip that up. You know, it's not fair on the internet these days. Someone could clip that out and say that's who I am as a person or not understand my joke. And this first topic here is all about my jokes not being understood, me living in as a misunderstood soul on this planet. Obviously, I was in this moment right here, I was actually planning to be misunderstood, but I didn't know it was going to cause a reaction that it did. So anyway, just recapping what I was saying was, this podcast is going to be a fluctuation of ideas, and I'm going to be more mindful about the editing process of the clips. And if you want to share this podcast for more people to hear it, one of my recommendations is that you go on my Instagram or my TikTok or my Facebook, if it's there, or YouTube, and look up the clips or see the clips I'm doing, like the reels, the videos, things of that nature, and share that to your audience. Like whatever calls to you around or inspires you about this podcast. I'm going to be making very shareable clips of this podcast. And that's what got me more comfortable to just riff off of many things on the main episode, because I can show clips of some of the good moments on here, and I'll have more clips. Now, I'm not going to really record this thing for 15 hours. It could be the same length, but I'm just kind of getting a groove of the new format of this podcast. So without further ado, let's get into the first topic here that you all have been waiting for, is the Airbnb fuckery. Now, over the weekend, I have a friend named Robin, and she was posting on Facebook about the moments that she had in a Airbnb superhost group. And I've seen her kind of messing around in that group for a while, and I decided to join. Upon joining the superhost group, I was invited right away. And joining this group, I noticed a lot of posts complaining about their renters touching the thermostat. Like, this one woman complained that they had the thermostat down to 65, but it was like 70 degrees or something like that, but it was 70 or like 65 degrees outside or something like that. So she was complaining that they were wasting money on her bill by turning the AC on when it was cool enough outside. Lucky for them, the last Airbnb I stayed at didn't have an AC because they wanted to be all fucking rustic. It's like, no, AC would get in the way of the vibes or some shit. So, you know, it was cool for a minute, but then there was like a hot day. And then I was like, wait, there's no AC in this? This is fucking crazy. So anyway, that lady was complaining. Just recently, there was a man complaining in that group about the guy staying at his Airbnb, sneaking in a woman at night, and then her leaving at 4 a.m. and he charges $5 extra a night for someone else to be at the Airbnb, and he was asking if he should message them and say that he saw him. So like, this really, like, this is the tip of the iceberg, by the way, of these Airbnb hosts. But these, it sounded like I said Airbnb hoes. I said Airbnb hosts. This is the tip of the iceberg, and I came to the conclusion after my experience in the superhost group that I might never stay at an Airbnb again. Hopefully Airbnb never wants to sponsor me. Hopefully that I never have aspirations of becoming a host and they don't pull up this podcast or this moment that I look back on and I'm ashamed of, and I get canceled by the Airbnb community. Hopefully that doesn't happen. But all I can do is say how I feel in this moment right now. And in this moment right now, I'm not very happy with how these super hosts, which are supposed to be the best of the best of the host of Airbnb, how they act in a private manner. It's very disturbing. So anyway, on to the main topic. Of course, I received this download of inspiration when I saw how other hosts acted, and I pretended to be a host in this group. So I posted in this group and I said, I said, is, and here's me reading my post, is it considered racist not to allow white people to colonize my property if I am white? I know people would assume this is virtue signaling or quote-unquote white guilt, but this is not the case. I love to go to brunch with other white people. I have white people as employees in my business, but I can't help but notice that the white demographic often uses more energy by turning the AC down to ridiculous level while BIPOC are a bit more reasonable with their thermostat. Now, I think most people know what BIPOC stands for and things like that. But it's Black, Indigenous, People of Color. It's what, you know, it's often used a lot to collectively. It's basically the more advanced version of POC. And if you don't know what POC is, it's People of Color. Anyway, are a bit more reasonable with the thermostat. How I would communicate that is I do not want white identifying bodies on my property without making it a race thing. How do I make it not a race thing if I don't want white identifying bodies? And that's kind of like just a play on how some of the most ridiculous woke people talk. Like they just say like white bodies and it's like talking to us like bodies or something. I don't know. It's just it's strange languaging to me, but hey, that's what the kids are doing. So I posted that, and at first, actually, I thought I wasn't going to get away with it. I thought I wasn't, you know, I thought I was going to be caught for joking. Like someone posted real edgy. So that person sniffed it out right then and there. And some people were laughing at it at first, which is weird because then later people started getting offended. And it's like, didn't you read the context of the post of like the people commenting before me to realize it was a joke? Did you fucking look at the reactions, seeing some people laughing? It's just interesting how people, I guess, don't know how to use social media. And so I got these comments, some of the highlight comments. And if you want to later, you could join the group, I suppose. Wait, what the hell is wrong with Facebook? It's not showing my posts. Jesus. Okay, hold on. No offense. Sorry, I didn't mean to say Jesus. Much love to Jesus. Fuck. Facebook is weird because it just like deletes or doesn't show comments. And it's been doing that on my phone. Now it's doing that on my desktop as well. Maybe I should update things. Maybe it's because I refuse to get automatic updates on my apps. But I mean, fuck, man. You're supposed to be the best social media in the world. Okay, here it is. So the highlights, I got it on Instagram. So the highlights is this one guy, Mike Poirier, I think his name is. Now he's a character. He said, "Well, you're being racist, so just admit it. You should stop posting immediately. How do you make it through a day without tripping over your own misguided sense of wokeness?" And I replied, "I just want to save money on my energy bill." This guy, Austin, I don't need to say his last name because he's not an offender. He says, "The fact is this isn't a joke, and you can even remotely think this is acceptable. It's extremely sad to me." And I replied, "Austin, well, you won't be coming to my Airbnb." And it's a shame that he didn't get the joke because he looks like a ginger and it feels like we would really hit it off. But, you know, some people were upset. Then I came back, and I like doing this when I'm trolling, but I came back and I said, maybe I should have included this. "I'm okay if white people stay outside on the patio. I am not ashamed of having them there. I just don't want them touching my thermostat." So I'm trying to like double down on this. Like, I don't have a problem with white people. I just don't want them touching my thermostat. Mike Poirier responds again, "Bruh, you're throwing gasoline on a dumpster fire of a post. Stop." I don't know why I used multiple P's. It just sounds like a, I don't know. When I see people use like drag out words like that, like STOPPPPPP, I think of like a teenage girl. I feel like that's like a teenage girl thing to do. I don't know if that's true or not. I know if Mike listens to this podcast, he's just going to get more angry, and maybe that's the, maybe I shouldn't be kicking this beehive, but I can't help it. So Mike then comes back and says, I don't think you'll have to worry about it much longer. Airbnb takes discrimination pretty seriously. Hopefully you'll learn from this experience. And I responded, Mike, you need to relax. Mike says, Brandon, I'm very relaxed, reporting racism to Airbnb from the comfort of my hammock, actually. Cheers. And then I responded, I will report you too. Two can play this game. Except I purposely said, I'll report you two as TWO and two can play this game as TO. So I purposely mixed up the spelling of the two twos, two, two, two. So hopefully he would catch that and use that as ammo against me, but he didn't catch it. I think he was too enraged to understand what I was doing there. And then I said, I'm sorry, I didn't mean it to be this way. I love whites and I have a lot of white friends. Yuki says, you are asking Brandon, don't apologize. Simply change your thoughts and grow from it. So at least Yuki was extending care and love and acceptance for me and was allowing me to redeem myself from my horrible problematic comments in this Airbnb group. Lisa says, Brandon, well, learn how to write and articulate then, because it's a horrific read. And if you meant otherwise, think about it before posting in a public forum or anywhere. It's incredibly insulting and condescending. Is it? I mean, I didn't know it was that condescending to point out the fact that, I don't hear people talk about this a lot, but white people, me as a white identifying body, I do need the thermostat down lower. Like I feel like, you know, I feel like there's been this thing where it's like, you know, the whole stereotype about like young white guys is a walk in the winter with shorts and sandals. And I kind of play that stereotype sometimes. But I think that's like a thing. You know, I'm not a scientist, but I think it's a thing that, you know, the white skin is meant for, like, that's why I get sunburned so easily. I'm meant to be in Alaska or some shit. Like, I'm meant to be like in a cave. Like, I'm not meant to be in out. Like, I can't be out for over 20 minutes. And it creates a huge issue with this whole butthole sunning trend and the ball sunning trend, because I'm a ginger and I'm like, how do I work myself up to this? Am I capable of working myself up to this? I don't know what a tan looks like on my skin. I guess I get kind of tannish on my arms, but I don't know. So it's like, I think it is part of my skin identity is that in the fucking heat, I can't stand the heat as much. And I like the AC down low, but I can't deal with the heat. Like, I just don't like heat. So I don't know. I think that's a white thing. I didn't, and I think it's fun to joke about it. I made a joke the other day, or a couple days ago, and I wrote a joke that's saying like Jesus is ginger. And it was just kind of playing off the fact that like some people like to fight over like what did Jesus look like and all that stuff. In all seriousness, Jesus was probably a lot more tan than I am. Just knowing the climate that he was in and where he was from, you know, I think he was, you know, I don't think he was a white guy. But I said, Jesus is ginger. And Makosi, she replied to my Facebook post saying something like, Jesus died on the cross, but not from sunburn. And I just thought that was hilarious. Like, I think like those things, like if we could just joke to each other about that, I think there would be more unity in this world. I really do feel like some good, kind-hearted comedy and being able to joke about ourselves a little bit, Like, it brings us together. It brings the races together. The race is together. It sounded like I was saying racists. No, but, like, I just feel like it brings unity to this world. You know, we can laugh at, like, the little differences and how we're different. And we notice our differences, but we don't take our differences as this tribalized identity that we have to fight each other over, or, you know, things of that nature. So, I don't know. I just feel like things like the Chappelle Show and comedy itself has brought people together. I really do feel like freedom of speech actually does bring people together, and inviting in those conversations without being ultra sensitive and shutting people down. I think that's how we really unite and, you know, we get along. So anyway, Monica Michelle, she responded, "This post had me in tears. I needed this laugh, so thanks for posting." So really, this was a very polarizing post. I didn't know it was going to be super polarizing. Rebecca didn't really want me to post it. She's like, "Wait, you didn't post it under an alias?" And I was like, "No." Yeah, so nope, I don't use aliases for my trolling all the time. Sometimes I use Amanda Nightfire, but I just gave my other alias away. Amanda Nightfire, she's a great character that I like to use, or I've liked to use in the past. I haven't used her in a while because she kept getting my Facebook banned. Hopefully I'm not losing you on what the hell I'm talking about. It was a sock puppet account. Amanda Nightfire, she hated men, and she was a very abusive mother, apparently. And it was all, I created a whole story behind the fake profile account. Maybe she'll come back from the dead. I got in a lot of trouble with that post, with that person. I got called out as Amanda Nightfire once, and that was fun. It was like a whole witch hunt against Amanda Nightfire, a fake account built by me. So anyway, now throughout all this, it got a little bit uglier. This Mike dude was a little bit unhinged, to say the least. And let me see if I can pull this up on my phone of what he said, because it's not showing up on my computer. Okay, I think that's weird. It's like showing up. I think it's showing up on my phone. Okay. So this Mike guy, he messaged me that night at 11:14 p.m. Now, mind you, I'm asleep at 11. I'm asleep by then. I go to sleep by 10:30. Often on the weekends too. You know, I like to get to sleep at the right time. It's my thing. And sometimes I just fall asleep. I'm just used to sleeping when the sun goes down. So Mike says, "You'll want to take my name off your shit real fucking quick unless you want real world trouble, asshole." And he called me 1, 2, 3. Four, five, like five times back to back almost. Actually, there was like a 30 minute, you know, 11:30 to 12:05. He was trying to call me on my messenger. And I had no idea until like the next morning. I'm like, oh shit, he was trying to call me? Like, what? That would have been fun answering the call though. And he said, "Get a fucking life, loser. There's millions of racists out there, and you gotta go for guffaw acting like one of them. Cheap, tired, what's the point? You're going to go after people that are calling out racism. What the fuck?" All right. I mean, and then he messaged all my friends who engaged on that post, warning them about me. He posted on my timeline, on my Facebook timeline, the screenshot of what I posted in my group, trying to expose me as like this anti-white racist. It was just wild. It was just, it just got too out of control, and sadly, I had to block old Mikey. He's probably listening to this episode now. I'm not trying to start no beef. I just think we need to chill out and take a breather here. This is what they talk about when they say white rage and white fragility. You know, this is what gives ammo for the concept of white rage and white fragility. And I don't agree with the whole, I think it's a very one-sided argument to call something white rage and white fragility. And it's very disconnected from understanding people. You know, it's like you don't inherit a certain rage or fragility just because of your skin color. But hey, this is where we are. So, you know, this is where we are in 2022. But that's probably what people are talking about. What they probably had one experience with or a couple experiences with a guy like Mike, and then they labeled it white rage or white fragility because he was very fragile. He was very angry. He wasn't willing to look at very reactionary. He wasn't willing to see the joke in it all. I was never aggressive towards him. He aggressed towards me and then said I was going after his wife. I don't know who his wife is, but it was a bit strange. Like, he felt attacked by what I was, you know, by me joking about the thing. But he was meeting me with a ton of aggression, trying to take my business down, trying to take me down as an Airbnb host, even though I'm not an Airbnb host, but he wanted to report me. And because I said two can play that game, he thought I was going to go after his Airbnb as well, which is weird. It's like if I shoot at you and then you shoot back at me, it's like, and then I get mad, like, you shot me and you endangered my family. I'm like, why you shot me first. I was defending myself. It's strange. It's strange how that concept is. But yeah, you know, I think the white rage, white fragility argument is often a one-sided thing and not fully understanding people. I think you get into that tribalistic nature when you don't understand people, when you're not surrounded by all walks of life, when you don't have actual diversity in your real friendships, or there's hierarchies within those friendships. Like, you know, it's not like a level communication where you feel like two equals talking to each. And then that goes into like the whole thing, you know, the whole thing, white people can't be racist. And the reason why I bring this up is because there's truth behind the aspect of like different tiers of jokes or perceived racism, whatever it may be. And the reason why people say white people can't be victims of racism is because of societal power, institutionalized power, and saying that, you know, since white people, gosh, it sounds like white supremacy. Like, since white people have more power, they can't be racist or something like that. Now, I don't fully agree with that concept, but I do agree with the concept that there's different, like, if I were to say in that group, I think it would have been more offensive if I said in that group and I was joking about black people, not wanting black people in my Airbnbs, because there's more of a deeper wound there, and society does play a role in that. Like, if a white Airbnb host joked and said, I don't want white people in my Airbnb because of the thermostat, blah, 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 is like, okay, well, like there's all these white Airbnb hosts and white people. What fucking percentage of the population are white people? What percentage? I want to get my facts straight. Okay, it says white alone, 76%. Finally found it. But it's Google. Who knows if that's true? So anyway, my point is that if someone said something hateful like that, like for real hateful, like they don't want white people in the Airbnb, it would be disturbing to me, but I'd be like, eh, like, okay, they're an asshole, moving on. But it would be disturbing, and I think it still would be, it's definitely still considered racism. But I think the point that people are trying to make, that you can't be racist towards white people, is that, you know, that concept of, you know, the levels of harm that it would create if somebody discriminated white people from an Airbnb, it wouldn't be as drastic. With that being said, I feel like everyone takes in their views to the fucking extreme. You can't be racist toward white people And then you got this fucking crazy shit that happens on Twitter where I don't even know how to walk through this on the podcast, but like groups in Twitter, you know, calling white people mayo monkeys and shit like that. And, you know, calling for genocide. Like that shouldn't be minimized as they're just prejudice. And that doesn't hurt us because we don't have power. Like that's hateful and disgusting and it should be pointed out. And the issue I have with the whole you can't be racist toward white people rhetoric is that it gives people a green light to say some real nasty things towards white people. And generalizing a group of people is never good. It's just never good. It never leads to a good thing. It never creates a solution. It doesn't create a solution for the person putting out the hate into the world because hate comes back at you. So yeah, it's just not good for the person on the receiving end. It's not good for the person putting out the hate. And the thing is, it's like the flaw behind the structural thing where it's like, you know, it has to be institutional racism in order to count. The flaw behind that is like if me being a white person, if I'm in the wrong neighborhood, I could still fucking die. Like I could still be outnumbered and get jumped. I could still, violence could be still committed towards me. It still has a bad effect to it. You know, thanks for helping me out for not calling it racism. Maybe they were just ultra prejudice and let's just like dumb down the word. And I think it's stupid to redefine the word racism and to minimize racism based off of, you know, the different targets of racism. In this experience, I see, you know, it's just like a good example of the concept, like to me, where it's like, dude, you're a white guy that owns an Airbnb and somebody made a joke. Just chill the fuck out. And plus it doesn't need that fucking crazy of a reaction. Like it's just like calm the fuck down. It was a joke. And yes, I've seen some disgusting things said about white people on the internet. And it's mind-boggling to me that they don't get checked for it. And I'm talking about like white social justice warriors and you know, black people do it too. It's just like the hatred behind it is quite disgusting. And it is kind of like, it's disturbing when someone actually hates white people, like a white girl hating white girls. Like you see that in the spiritual community, white spiritual women. And the funny thing is like, what's popular in the social justice aspect of the coaching or spiritual community is to dunk on white spiritual women. But ironically, it's white spiritual women hating white spiritual women. And it's just like the most cringiest thing. It's stupid. It doesn't lead to any good. It should be called racism and self-hatred and whatever else. Like, give it any label you want. It's just like bad. But there's definitely different dynamics to look at things. Where, you know, a comment is made, there's definitely a different, you know, we all come from different experiences. We come from a different pain. We, you know, so in these situations, there's nuance and there is, you know, a different sting to it according to how you say it, you know? So it's like terms like the N-word just has so much more weight to it and pain behind it than calling me a honky or something. So, you know, that's the point I wanted to make. There's nuance there, but I think people just fucking take their feelings and then drive it to the fucking extreme. And then we're left like yelling at each other without having constructive conversation, which is, you know, part of it is like a theme of what I want to talk about on this podcast later. All right, I'm back. Had to refill my water here. So, now I want to go on to, I wrote this on my Substack, Stop Pacifying Little Bitches. And this is a business section of this podcast. We're going to talk a bit about business. Goodness. All right. I've been running up and down the stairs. So anyway, This was on my Substack. Go to brandonmarshallhavener.com to check out my Substack. It's where I post my content now. And you can subscribe to it with your email. I send out emails sometimes with that too. I'm not going to attach everything to it to an email. But this is currently my platform to where I can be completely uncensored if needed be. And somewhere that where people can find me if they nuke my Instagram again. I thought my Instagram recovered, but I don't think it did. I don't fucking know. But it should be. The 90-day period ends on June 8th, so my Instagram should be back in full force if it's not already. Sometimes it feels like it is, and other times it feels like they're punishing me, and it never was like that on that level, so hopefully we get back to the Instagram groove. TikTok has been treating me a little bit better. God bless the CCP. Maybe that will boost my podcast ratings. If they don't listen to everything else I fucking say. So anyway, I made a post here. Stop pacifying little bitches. And I said, rejection can be the ultimate gift. We can't see that gift in the moment because it flares up our feelings of being not good enough or being afraid that we've hurt somebody. As a business owner, you may find yourself wanting to save the world, wanting to prove people wrong, and wanting to guard your reputation. In some instances, this is a good thing because, of course, you don't want to be somebody who drops the ball and doesn't honor your clients with your time, presence, and care. However, you still need to protect yourself from vampires who will leech off your energy and good nature. You will need to take up for yourself when somebody disrespects your space. Abandoning yourself to make somebody who's not taking responsibility on their end comfortable will make them comfortable to dishonor you. It looked like, okay. For instance, somebody may completely disrespect the service you provided and have no constructive criticism. With entitlement, they just demand a refund. You may think the best thing to do is give them a refund or give them a free course in return. Sometimes it is the best option. It all depends if there's honor and respect in the conversation, along with other variables. If somebody is disrespecting your space, you're only abusing yourself further by trying to make things better. Just like trying to appease an abusive partner you should have left a long time ago. If you're in an abusive relationship, buying their affection will make things worse in the long run. So, for instance, if you offer a $1,000 refund to somebody who's being shitty to you, you may think the cost is $1,000. But the cost of abandoning yourself is much greater. The greater cost, you let them know this behavior is okay and they become themselves and they welcome themselves in your space. They buy another program and demand a refund a year after completing that as well. You open the energy portal for disrespect. You let them know that disrespecting you is okay, and you also send out the energy to the universe to welcome more people to disrespect you. You let them fester in your space like a rotten apple, spoiling your entire community. Rejection is protection. This is something I say a lot and something that I've seen in my own life. When somebody is displeased with you and being excessively disrespectful, the greatest thing you can receive is their rejection. When you pacify their behavior, you're allowing it to become a bigger problem in your life. When you put your foot down, you are protecting yourself. You protect yourself and teach your community to treat you with more respect. You let the universe know that this behavior will not be tolerated. If they get mad and go their own way, then good riddance. You now have a peaceful life and open up space for 10 times the people to come in and will respect you. One person who is disrespectful takes up the capacity of tens or hundreds of people that are light on the system. Never shy away from pissing somebody off if it means it's good for your own well-being. So that's the article right there. Check out my Substack. You can go to brandonmarshallhavener.com and it's right there on the front of the page. Yeah, this also is very valuable when you're under the crosshairs of cancel culture. You know, you might have heard me say not to apologize. this is one of the reasons why. And something else I say about it is one of the worst things that can happen is that you apologize. They sort of accept your apology, but then they annoy you for the rest of your life. I've seen this firsthand. When someone is told to apologize, maybe they're not completely forgiven, but then the friends around them message them and said, have you read these education materials to make sure that you're in good standings? If not, I can't be seen around you. Very cultish behavior. That's the cancel culture side of things. But back to the business side, the business boundaries side of it all, is just know that you can't please everybody. And it's normal for someone who is heart-centered in their business. I don't know if that's become a buzzword now, but if you're a normal person that has fucking feelings, you're going to feel bad when a client is unsatisfied or if someone is unsatisfied with you, etc., things of that nature. But if you cater to people who are constantly disappointed in you, the cost is much greater than the upfront thing. It's much greater than the refund that you give. It's much greater than that one time. You're telling the universe, you're telling people that it's okay to be treated that way. So something to flip your mindset around that is to realize that every displeased person brings you closer to the people that you desire. Now, of course, if you legitimately fuck up, if you legitimately do something where you're like, oh yeah, I caused that, then of course apologize. But you don't want to be ultimately over apologetic where you apologize for breathing or apologize for a responsibility that they need to take on their end. And that's a big thing there. And it truly is, it's very real that you'll notice that one client that is heavy on the system will take up the space of tens of hundreds of aligned clients. So it's so important to clear up that space so you have more capacity. Part of having more capacity is having solid boundaries in your personal life, in your business, and things of that nature. So put that in your pipe and smoke it. I am quenched or parched. Quench is a word to say quenching the thirst, right? I just say words sometimes. So anyway, on to the next topic here, this next topic at hand. I wanted to talk a little bit about my mushroom journey. Over these past maybe half year. Yeah, about a half a year now. Now, my first experience with magic mushrooms has been... It was a night at an event that I was at, and I'm not sure, I don't know if I need to share it on my podcast, but if you've been called to men only events, let me know and I'll let you know the details. I don't know if I should mention mushroom usage and the fucking event at the same time publicly. I don't think it's a big deal, but I don't want to end up having to go back and delete it and blah, blah, blah. So anyway, I was at an event. With men, we weren't sharpening each other's iron. we weren't staring at each other's cocks. We were just having a genuine time. Maybe we've hugged each other for sure, but nothing crazy, not staring at each other's buttholes. But I experienced combo at that event. And then the last night, I had my first experience with mushrooms. And something that I noticed, so Rebecca has had these great experiences with marijuana edibles. And I noticed when I take edibles, I just lose all productivity. I just like fall asleep or start busting out laughing or whatever. So I was interested in taking mushrooms for a while, and I finally did. Or working with mushrooms. I think taking is not a good term to use. But I'm not advocating this of like just anybody chew on some mushrooms. Like, I think this really needs to be mindful, and you really need to know if this is the best for your own experience. And I'm also not advocating drug use. I'm not advocating that you do it. I'm just sharing my experience. And I'm not saying it'll work the same way for you. I'm not selling anything. I'm just saying that with my experience, I had a good experience. Let me lean back a little bit. I feel a bit worked up. Okay. Let me get a sip of water. So, the experience that I had the first night was, first, of course, I had my head, we were in a circle with other people who took the mushrooms, and we all had our like sleeping bag or our shirt over our head. We had like shirts over our head, just waiting for the experience. And I was uncomfortable in my chair. And I was like overthinking it. Was like, should I move to my sleeping bag? Like, this was at night. And I was like, should I move to my sleeping bag? Should I like, is it cool? Like, are we here having the ceremony together? And I just had this whole mind thing. And then I moved into my sleeping bag. And I remember when it first hit, I was laughing my ass off a little bit. Because it just like, it hit me with this euphoria. And I was very amazed at the feelings in my body. I had a wonder. I had like a, I just like, I felt so, I thought it felt so cool that it felt cold on my head, but like warm on my body because I was in a sleeping bag. I was like, whoa, I get to feel the sensations of both feelings. And that's when I realized I was pretty fucking high. Definitely looking out in the stars were brighter. You know, it's like you look in, you close your eyes and put a blanket over your head and you see like shapes and patterns and things of that nature. I took a mid dose, but throughout my experience, I noticed like this sound, like a radio wave. And it was almost like I was talking to aliens. Like I was talking to the Arcturians. It's like, that's what it was fucking like. So I was just having this experience, and it was like I was having a whole outlook of my life, you know, from when I was a kid. I think I had a vision of being born again. I was having like these flashbacks of different parts of my journey. And then a whole outlook of life and humanity growing and how we're all collectively working together to make the world a better place, kumbaya and all that stuff. And I was looking at the pain of the world, but I was able to look at it from a detached view of like a 360 view. And there was this thing that kept coming up to me that things are going to work out, you know, throughout all the crazy stuff that was that's been happening in the world lately. I kept getting the message that things will fucking work out. And I thought that was cool. So, you know, I just felt like I was connected, and I felt like I wasn't alone. Like I felt like I had, like I was protected. I had big visions of like the impact that I, you know, a lot of times I'm hard on myself. I had big visions on the major impact I had on Rebecca's life and her business. And it like really helped me gain perspective of how appreciated I am. And I think as men, you know, sometimes like we're so used to wanting more and more and more, challenging ourselves, sometimes being hard on ourselves, especially me, definitely been hard on myself. Instead of like really looking at how much impact I've already made in my life. So that really gave me a good perspective of the impact that I've made and how appreciated I am, with family, things of that nature, and how much of an impact I make in everybody's life. You know, I healed a lot, but you know, of pain between me and my mother, who passed away in 2018. you know, I healed a lot of childhood wound. Like, I was just processing. I wouldn't say, like, fully healed. It just, like, a healing experience, I guess. And the facilitator there was playing the guitar just at the right time. I don't know if he heard me or it was just by intuition, but he was, like, playing this guitar where when it was, like, or maybe it just, like, triggered it. I don't know. But I had a moment where I had, like, this huge release of tears coming down. But it wasn't in this, like, I'm in pain or I'm hurting type of way. It was kind of like tears of relief. And I was up all that night because mushrooms keep you up all night. And then we flew out the next that next day. So it really, like, washed out my system. Like, it cleaned my system. It healed me. And it relieved some stress I was having about some things. Now, since then, I've been working with mushrooms. I do it, like, about once a month of, like, a macro dose. And I don't know if I want to be doing, you know, mid doses, really, where I trip. But it's not like I trip balls off. Maybe I'll do a fucking heroic dose one day. But the mid doses help enough as it is, right? It's like kind of perfect. When I go a little bit above that, I notice it gets a little bit more heavy. And I've had heavy experiences. I wouldn't say I had bad trips. I don't know exactly what people identify as a bad trip, though. Because I don't know if that means you're not willing to accept the things in front of you, if that's what it is. Because I've seen heavy things when tripping. But I never considered it a bad trip because I'm like, okay, there's a lesson here. Or, you know, there's a surrender there. So it's never, I never get out of it. Like, sometimes I get out of it like, whoa, I processed a lot. But I never get out of it like, whoa, that was a fucking nightmare. So I don't know. Whatever you consider a bad trip. But one other notable experience that I had with mushrooms. Was I wanted a reflection of the book I was writing on cancel culture. And this kind of put me into the space where it's like, no, I don't want to write. I don't want to put this out there. I want to put aspects of it on maybe a paid Substack or a program or something like that. It's still going to, there's still parts of it that's going to go out to the world. But I realize that a lot of that book has been a therapy session for me. And it was kind of like on the drama, like part of it, I feel like was on the drama triangle, getting my gripes out about cancel culture and those who have attempted to cancel me in the past, and calling out the hypocrisy. And I kept, and I titled this podcast, Put the Gun Down, for a reason. I kept hearing this voice in my head, or not in my head. It just felt, it feels real when you're tripping. Put the gun down. And it was like a mantra. Put the gun down. Put the gun down. And that was coming up. And no, it's not, I didn't take it as anything gun control. So, not like that. But I just felt like I've been having my guard up and I've always been in this fighting mode. And really in my life, all my life I've been in fight mode, right? You know, I always felt like I had to fight. You know, I really think of high school or starting in middle school, right? It's like I was almost forced to fight because it was just the behavior of the classroom that I was in, where, you know, like someone was paid $1 to fight me and I was like backed into a corner in the locker room and I had to fight back. That year I was undefeated in my fight, so that's a good thing. I was cornered in the locker room twice and won both of those fights in eighth grade. And I just felt like it was always like these physical fighting. I was bullied. You know, I was pressured into bullying a kid in eighth grade. It was just a mess. You know, I kind of like look back on that, it's like that was like, you know, and that's part of my journey. Like I look back at those experiences when I was a young teenager or just becoming a teenager and how fucked up it was. Like, you know, the situations I was put into where I was supposed to better myself and learn, you know, that's the environment that I was put in. And I don't know if this is something like a lot of guys relate to. Rebecca doesn't relate to it. I don't see a lot of women that relate to it. But for me, it was like fighting was all around me. And then in high school, that was more of my own construction because I felt like a validation of fighting. You know, the times where I would win a fight against a bully in middle school, I think I was like a bit addicted to that validation. So then I started looking for fights. And in high school, there was this ongoing beef between this other group of people. You know, I always had to watch my back when walking home from school. And part of it's my instigation. So I take credit in that. And it was like, I don't want to say it was a gang, because it wasn't like gun violence or knife violence or anything like that, but like it was gang mentality. And for a while in high school, I was always that person that you had to fight me to get initiation into that gang, so to say. Not like a deadly gang with guns and knives. Maybe, I don't know. I've never been in like a gunfight or a knife fight, just fist fights. But I had people that I didn't even know wanting to fight me to be accepted with this group of people. So all my life, like that was how I resolved things, was starting fights with people or fighting back to defend myself. Or like even when I made music, like if someone said something about me, then I always had like, I was like, always had something to say back that was more witty, or like do a skit or like a song making fun of somebody. And that was sort of like my response. It was always the fight response. So with this journey with mushrooms, it was kind of like letting go of that aspect, feeling like I need to be on guard or I need to fight. Now there's a certain aspect of this part of my personality that I'm grateful for, because you know, in ways, I feel like the way that Rebecca and I relate in our relation, in our marriage, our relationship too, it is still a relationship, but in our marriage, you know, football analogy, where I always get her lost on, but hopefully some of you watch American football. Can't believe I even had to say it's American football. American football is football, period. So it's kind of like, you know, sometimes I feel like I've been like the fortress around Rebecca in a way, kind of like the knight. I guess it's, you know, that's a better explanation. But like in football, the quarterback has an offensive line, and that quarterback can play better with a solid offensive line. And the quarterback scores and things like that. So anyway, you know, like I kind of look at the relationship between Rebecca and I, and, you know, the battles we've been through. The tough internet battles, it, you know, felt like I'd been her protector in ways and helped solidify her strength in being able to deal with controversy and conflict and things of that nature. Almost like being that fortress around her so she could stay in the pocket and throw bombs at her wide receivers or something. I don't know. If you know, you know. If you watch football, you know. So, you know, that's what I felt like, kind of like the role I've played. And so I find value in my warrior energy and that fighting aspect. But I think sometimes it's been a trauma response and a go-to for me. And mushrooms has been really helping me mellow out and really understand the levels of tribalism. And I believe I've said it on this podcast before that I don't like getting into the tribalism, but I think the mushrooms has really helped move those layers. Something else I noticed with mushroom therapy that I applied to myself, but you know, when I do this, it gives me the freedom to kind of work on myself in ways that I may have only found in the past by working with a professional or a coach or whatever. I'm noticing the mushrooms is kind of playing that role sometimes, where I'm like, this one moment I had was I was being instructed to move my jaw in different ways to release tension and to get movement into my body. And I thought it was so profound that I like had these guides by me that were helping me release this tension and trauma. And it's been really healing. This has been really amazing. And I'm taking it as long as I feel called to. I don't want, you know, I want to put space in between where I work with mushrooms to not overdo it. But it's been an amazing experience. So I want to say that I've been saying on multiple episodes I was going to talk about it. And that's been my lesson so far. Maybe I'll have more to talk about it later. But it's been quite amazing for me. And I think it should be done with intention. But it can be a very amazing and fun experience. So yeah. Going on to that, I felt the need, since I was saying put the gun down and because of current events, is to talk about the shooting that happened in Texas. And the one thing that I wanted to say here that I posted about this to start this out. For one thing, I tweeted out and I reposted it. Oh, and Mike was there too. From the Airbnb, he posted under this post as well to expose me for being racist towards white people. But I said, we're in a society where we resolve things with Band-Aid solutions while our culture rots at the core. Nothing changes until the conversation changes. We aren't willing to get to the core of the mental/physical/emotional health. We try to put fires out by attacking symptoms. And something else that really points out my thoughts about this whole situation is this guy, Jason Bassler. I don't know how big of a following he has, but it was a pretty viral tweet. He said, no more school shootings in 3 easy steps. 1, abolish the FBI. 2, abolish gun control. 3, abolish public schools. So that kind of speaks to how I feel about the resolution to things. But to me, like, I feel like this whole conversation, it's like a repeated conversation that happens year after year after year. It seems like things ramp up every fucking election year. And people just yell at each other and get mad at each other. Meanwhile, we're supposed to be protecting kids, but it's like, you know, you could find criticism for anybody, for a lot of people who haven't been protecting kids, especially from the past 2 years with this pandemic. Like, you know, no one has been protecting kids from authoritarianism. I mean, not no one, but there was a large group of people that weren't. And to me, it's like, I don't know what to trust anymore. I don't know what the government is involved in and what they're not involved. Well, I kind of do on some level, but it's like, you know, what are false flag events? I think the government's very capable of, you know, creating these mass shootings and trauma in our world. And then the corporate media just pumps it out to people. And I feel like we get so traumatized in this fear state and then we're fighting each other. And I didn't want to bring in the same political talking points that, you know, is said over and over again on the internet, because it doesn't fucking solve anything. We're just at each other's throats with the polarization. Like, yes, some level of responsibility is good for gun control. And I feel like there's a lot of laws in place, at least where I live. So it's like, I don't think people even know the laws that are in place and just spurt out talking points. But I also think the Second Amendment is very important to defend yourself. You know, it's something unique that America has. It's like, once they take the guns away, or if they ever do from Americans, you've seen how the government acts when they're drunk on power and how they already acted in 2020. I don't think people understand or see what goes on in other places like China. I think it's Shanghai. You got people screaming out of buildings, jumping out of buildings. Not to go too dark. I don't want to get too dark here. But they had another COVID outbreak. And a food shortage. And they're forcibly locked down. They don't have any way to defend themselves. They don't have guns. Mass surveillance in that country. Canada has been ridiculous during the pandemic. I don't know exactly what's going on now. I know that I think you still can't fly if you don't get the Fauci juice. So it's like that is so, you know, authoritarian and anti-humanity to do that. And I even like remember hearing from Canada that they would follow people who didn't get the jab. They would follow them and make sure that they were buying only essential things in stores and making sure they weren't buying anything else to punish them. Like countries try to punish people for not making this choice and people justified those decisions. Australia, they had COVID camps. And somehow this whole narrative dropped maybe when records leaked, Ukraine war got hot. But it's like people just kind of forgot it, like all this shit was happening. But that's why the Second Amendment is fucking important. But, you know, like you can have the stance where you feel the Second Amendment is important, but still want kids to be safe. And I think the situation itself has been very tragic. Any shooting is tragic. The past two were in Buffalo and in the school have been tragic situations. Sometimes I wonder, you know, if there's a deeper thing happening. I know the one in Buffalo, there were the guy that worked at the shop. Hopefully I don't get my podcast banned for talking this shit. But the guy at the shop, he was working on a car that ran off water. And apparently everybody who tried to fucking create a car that runs off water ended up missing or killed. So it's like one of the conspiracy theories around that, and saying it as a conspiracy theory, not to discredit it, but like just saying it's a theory right now. It's not all like, you know, it's not all fucking proven. But one of the things said about that is that, you know, instead of assassinating the guy who was making the innovative vehicle that runs off water, it's like target him, but then make it look like it was a mass shooting instead of an assassination. And then, you know, it's like, you know, if you look up things like MK Ultra and, you know, how people are mind controlled and things like that, it's not far-fetched. And then when you bring this stuff up, people like to say that it's dishonoring or disrespectful to the victims. And it's like, no, they're still victims. But it's like, who were they a victim to? You know, what happened? We should ask questions. We should look this up. I'm not saying that every shooting was a false flag event, but it's just like sometimes things seem a bit fishy how things add up and how things are put together. And we should question things, especially what happened in these past 2 years. And we shouldn't be taking everything at face value. It's really a shame to hear about like the police holding back the parents. It kind of reminds me of my time working security, where it's like we're taught to just like look the part and be a deterrent. But if anything actually went down, walk the other way. Like that's what we were taught as security officers. And it feels like policemen are taking on that same mentality, which is crazy because it's like we need more people stepping up and having courage in situations like this. You know, there's so many situations where I don't see people stepping up or pulling out their fucking camera phone instead. And it's just insane. Like not the shooting situation, but other situations with the camera phone. Do I have something on my It was like dark on my below my lip, but it was just my facial hair. I was looking at it. So yeah, I just, you know, I kind of just wish that not everyone tried to have a, you know, it would be refreshing if people didn't always talk about politics or, you know, blindly obey their political tribe and actually came to these conversations from a different viewpoint or from a different level of consciousness. You know, it's like if we continue the same conversation, it's just going to lead to nowhere. And, you know, it's just like we're never willing to meet ourselves in the middle or to understand each other. We want a lot of the same things. I feel like most people are more level-headed and modern. Not modern. Is it modern? You know, I don't know if I want to say centrist, but like middle of the pack. Most people aren't extremist. So it's like we can talk about this stuff and find a solution. But it's like when our emotions are high, we're just yelling at each other. And it's like I don't want to be part of that yelling at someone else, you know, the same talking point or joining in the verbal violence of, you know, hurting someone else for even verbally or emotionally because of something someone else did, you know? It's becoming the point where all this information becomes noise and emotional manipulation and destructive to each other and divide and conquer. And it's like, what if we could all band together? Because, you know, something else that I said is that I feel like both with when the BLM protests broke out in riots in the summer and January 6th, I think feds had a play in both of them. I think the feds work hard to discredit movements. And if we all got together as humanity, as humans, and realized, you know, how we're being manipulated to fight each other and how people are being treated like puppets on a string to just go after people whenever something happens in the news, like, you know, just armed information militants of just going after each other. If we learn like where this is all leading to and what it meant for both for us and the person across from us, then we can come to better solutions. I don't have all the fucking answers, but the thing that the way that people are carrying themselves now is not the way to go by it. Like it's, people need to fucking chill. I think talking less might help. So you can gather your thoughts and then come to a level-headed solution to where we can honor our Second Amendment rights. We can protect our children and protect people in general. You know, there wasn't it. I do like to actually dive into solutions and things of that nature. There was this one video that had some statistics of how, it, you know, an armed defender can truly stop a lot of the damage or any damage from a mass shooter, for example. When a mass shooter is challenged, they can't cause as much damage and they're more occupied with retreating than creating the damage and violence that they do. So that was an interesting thing to see. He pulled out all the statistics and different scenarios of shootings and things of that nature. And, you know, it would be helpful if we had protectors. You know, there's always going to be wolves out there. There's this argument between it being a mental health issue, which it definitely is a mental health issue, or a gun issue. Well, you can't cause as much damage if you are mentally ill without a gun. But if you just get rid of guns, a mentally ill person can find access to a gun, even if it's harder to find access to. Or they can still do some type of damage. So really it just shows like the cracks in our culture. And really fucking fuck public schools, you know? I feel like we need to reform public schools. Like, that would be the smart thing to do. I'm going to be a homeschooler, homeschooling my kids, or private school. And I know, you know, I'll have the funds to do it. Our family will have the funds to do it. And not everyone has the time or money available to do so, I suppose. But any sacrifice that one can make for their kids to make sure their education is safer and better is important, in my opinion. And I told you my public school fucking experience. The only experience I had with like the mass shooting thing was Columbine was the time when I was in sixth grade. That's the only time there was really a lot of fear and fake threats going on around that time. And there were some gun scares in our school, but nothing ever happened. And that was the only time. It was like it kind of disappeared of being a thing throughout high school and things of that nature. There was a DC sniper. That was kind of creepy. And he was a sniper going around the DC area. It was wild, like sniping people at gas stations and stuff. But fuck, like school to me, it's like it's so much like a prison system. The food, the buses, the way that you're treated. Sometimes it feels like you're exposed to some of the worst behavior of humanity going to a public school. And it was bad with me growing up, and I just feel like it sounds a lot worse when I look at it. And that's without even bringing in the public school shooting incidents. It's like just the environment itself, just the culture itself. Like these guys, you know, the people who do the shooting are psychotic. They've been bullied and treated bad by the system themselves. And their family members. And I think a lot of people go through that. They just don't act out as a lot of people don't act out as that violent. But it's really a dark place to be. And if we truly wanted change, we'd be really checking our culture and how we educate our children, how we protect our children, how we're there emotionally for children. And really, it starts at home. You can't necessarily always depend on the public system to do that for you. So, you know, even though like a lot of people want to scream on social media at somebody and saying that they're part of the problem, it's best to look at ourselves and see what part of the problem that we're creating and how we can improve the lives of our children or future children or our family, or how we can give to the local community. And stop trying to take on the entire world. You know, just like the sage Jordan Peterson advice. I still can't say his name, though. I'll get canceled. This is too fresh from the fat shaming incident. But it's like, clean your own room. Get your own house in order. And once you get your house in order, including your family, then you can venture out into the community and help the community. And all of us had that mindset, we can help heal this culture that we're living in. But the thing is we have to get away from these hot takes and trying to own the liberals or own the conservatives or whatever the fuck, and arguing the same talking points over and over and over again, and actually see what is needed to heal and what moves that we can make to protect our own children and also prepare our own children for the world. And raise them in a positive environment. And if you can fucking do that, then extend that to the community. And I think that is, you know, it's not as flashy. It's not as preachy. It's not as, you know, you might not get that adrenaline hit by owning somebody else online and winning a debate. But it certainly helps more. A lot more. So that's my take on the whole thing. I was kind of not wanting to talk about it, but then I named this Put the Gun Down. And I was like, you know what? I got some thoughts to say about it. When I said Put the Gun Down, that was me about my mushroom journey. It wasn't necessarily saying that if you put the gun down, that you will be out of danger and the Second Amendment is not crucial. I remember this one guy during the protest in 2020, sometimes riots. It's this guy that I actually met in 2015 during the Freddie Gray incident in Baltimore, because I was serving in the National Guard at that time, and we were deployed there in Baltimore City to make, you know, to keep peace. And it was peaceful when we were there. You know, the night before, there was like a CVS getting burned and all that crazy stuff. I was like, what the fuck did I sign up for? But when we got there, everything calmed down. And I met this guy there, and he's very passionate about these movements and things of that nature. And he messaged me on 2020 on Facebook. We were still Facebook friends. And he said, can you tell someone in your chain of command, or like someone that you used to know, like I wasn't in the Army anymore. He's like, can you tell someone that you used to know in the Army, like, to put their rifle down and, you know, to make a sign of peace? And it's like, I get what he was, I guess, trying to say, or do, or what he was wanting the vision of. But I think, like, ironically, people bypass the world that we're in today and to think that we can just bypass it into peace. That would lead to fucking disaster if someone in a people in a military uniform just laid their M4s and their machine guns and shotguns down and, you know, kneeled down or whatever and just laid it down and it's like, we come in peace. Like, in the world that we fucking live in, someone's going to take that rifle and it's going to get really ugly. So, I don't know. Sometimes we think of dilute, like people say, like, you know, every parent should have a, you know, every kid should have a social worker. And it's like, that sounds great. Like, we should address the mindset of kids and things of that nature. But it's like oversimplifying a solution. You know, what the social worker that works for the government, which is the government puts out the worst products ever or the worst service ever, you know, or the solution of like every teacher should have a gun to protect schools. Really? Do you want that? You do want that? My seventh grade teacher couldn't stand us and threatened to jump out the window because like she was just like became mentally unhinged. It's part of it was our fault. And just like the, you know, one of my teachers had dementia in 12th grade and left her cart, you know, like the kids would mess with her and push the cart into the elevator. Like, what, you want her carrying a gun on her hip? And I have many other teachers. Another teacher on 420, she was really loopy. And at the time in eighth grade, I thought it was marijuana. But now looking back, it could have been an edible. It could have been something crazier. It was like she was seeing things, like hallucinating. She might have been on mushrooms herself. So it's just interesting how people come up with these cookie cutter solutions that are somehow going to solve the world's problems. Like, you're going to just put your gun down and peace will be made and you'll just hug it out with the military. Or, you know, maybe people watch too many fucking movies. Or give teachers guns. You know, a lot of teachers in public schools don't even know how to fucking teach. You're going to teach them how to shoot too? It's just wild. Or if everyone had a social worker, there wouldn't be violence. It's like throwing money at a situation without actually looking deep into the culture of how we relate, you know, and what values we have as a culture. So, I don't know. I don't have the core solution, but hopefully I knocked down some of the fake solutions and gave insight on what maybe we should stop fucking doing. And maybe that will help. Maybe that was of value. So anyway, last thing about this podcast to lighten up the mood is bathing in a woman's milk. I don't know how to fucking, I don't know why I put this as a topic on this podcast. Maybe just to lighten the mood because I don't know how to articulate what this is. There was an ad This was all parody, by the way. Sorry if I ruined it. All parody. But I found this thing online, and it was this ad of this older woman saying, bathe in my milk. It can be 2% milk. No, not 2%. Traditional milk, almond milk. Hopefully she had 2%. Oat milk. Maybe coconut milk. And it was for men only. And then there's these awkward pictures of guys in milk. Just guys like sitting in a tub of milk while she stands behind them in a dirty dress. You'll just have to watch my, go on my Instagram or my TikTok, and I have a reel or a TikTok about it, and I point it out. And I also have it on Facebook, bathing in milk. So you can do that after this podcast. That would be a palate cleanser from some of the heavier topics here. But still might freak you out. It's still kind of dark, weird. I thought it was going to be the video that got me in front of millions of viewers, but apparently it didn't take off. So back to the drawing board. Anyway, thank you for listening to the Sorry I Offended You podcast. Until next time, I will see you next week. Please share this video or share the clips of this video. Tag me in a post. Let me know what you thought about some of the topics I talked about, whatever you're inspired to talk about. And, you know, that's how we get the word out of this podcast, on this podcast. So thank you. It's been an honor. Until next time.